Hello, and welcome to Anime Audio Commentary. Today I'll be commenting on episode 30 of Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. If you'd like to watch along, then start watching now. So last time, we left off on a bit of an interesting note. Dr. Marco was fully prepared to die. Oh dear. So it seems like we're getting a little bit of backstory. Mustang's decision to become a soldier seems to be at odds with his master, who ostensibly taught him flame alchemy. And you know, considering the atrocities that occurred in Ishval, his master has a pretty good point. I do find it interesting that, you know, the only person who currently knows flame alchemy is essentially a dying old man who refuses to essentially get any kind of monetary compensation for his studies. In part because he's created a highly destructive force. So he is, I guess, understandably reticent to hand it over to the military. You know, in a sense, this is sort of like the Manhattan Project, in that, you know, they developed this horrible weapon, and then some of them are like, ooh, you know, maybe this wasn't a super good idea. Of course, at this point in time, Roy's master is, you know, sort of hanging on to his ideals. Oh, that's a twist. Master Hawkeye, he says. So I guess this does in part explain Mustang and his relationship with Hawkeye, the lieutenant. Very interesting indeed. You know, they're sort of bound to each other through their mutual relationship with her father. So it seems to me that this is sort of like the genesis of whatever happens between the two of them. You know, in part it's Mustang's idealism that he does want to make a difference, and that even though flame alchemy might be a horrible weapon, it could be, in the right hand, used for good, like any other kind of tool. Oh, that's very interesting indeed. You know, it seems like the secrets of flame alchemy are, in part, tattooed on Hawkeye's back, but they've also been disfigured, and those look like burn scars to me. I also have to wonder that, you know, the way Mustang and Hawkeye were talking about being soldiers and all that, I have to wonder if the reason why Hawkeye joined the military was to follow Mustang and stay by his side. Seems pretty reasonable to me, but I'm just assuming things. So I find this whole line of conversation interesting. You know, the way Ed's talking about the pistol, it's in a sense kind of how I've been talking about flame alchemy. You know, obviously it's a weapon, but it's a tool. It can be used for both good and evil, and the way he's talking about it, it feels to me that Hawkeye might relate this in some way to her own experiences. Man, you know, I think Edward doth protest a little bit too much. Alright, so now we're getting into the really heavy topics here. You know, now we're talking about Ishval and the genocide and all the atrocities that were committed. It only makes sense that we would cut to Dr. Marco. Scar is pretty insistent that Marco tell him, well, everything, essentially. So we're sort of, I guess, going to get the insider information from both conversations. You know, Hawkeye's sort of talking about it culturally. You know, it makes sense that given how barren Ishval was, the people would be very hardy. I guess it also makes sense that a perceived atrocity committed against them would only galvanize them further. Now that's something we haven't heard before. You know, the Ishvalan Civil War had been going on for 7 years before things really hit the fan. You know, presumably it was merely, like, purely military conflict before, but after that executive order came down, it became a war of extermination, and all the state alchemists were basically allowed to war crime to their heart's content, as it were. I find it notable that Hawkeye remembers it so poorly. Or rather, reflects on the events as being incredibly horrible. Because, I mean, they were, but I think it speaks to her moral character that she can look back on such things as being horrific. You know, somebody like Kimblee, he would surely look back on his time in Ishval with, some degree of wistfulness or affection, you know. Those were the good old days, as it were. Now, I believe this alchemist we're seeing here had already met his end at Scar's hands. But he seems to be relishing this whole deal a little bit too much. You know, at least Mustang has a decidedly neutral expression on his face as he immolates people. Whereas Armstrong, even though he merely constructed a wall, you know, he's clearly not enjoying anything that's going on. You know, Mustang was right in that he really doesn't have the disposition for this kind of thing. So there's little bits and pieces here. You know, that alchemist screaming about his leg. We saw Scar kill him. We saw the ice alchemist from the first episode sort of sitting there with a thousand-yard stare. Now we get a little bit of interaction between Hughes and Mustang. I do find it interesting that the art style has changed ever so slightly to sort of accommodate the thousand-yard stare that all of them have. You know, even the Lieutenant Colonel Hughes, you know, he's no alchemist, but he's a soldier just like anyone else, so I'd imagine he took his fair share of killing. I mean, if nothing else, you know, Lieutenant Colonel is lucky in that he has someone waiting back home for him. I guess fortunately Mustang was wrong in this instance, that the soldiers who never shut up about their loved ones don't make it back from the war. You know, it really is unfortunate that even Mustang is sort of becoming demoralized by this whole thing, you know. No matter how much overwhelming force they throw at the Ishbalans, they still get back up. And really, you know, it seems like the only solution is either to give up and surrender or to exterminate them all. And we know which option was taken. I find it rather unfortunate that the first meeting between Hawkeye and Mustang was on the battlefield after she'd already taken on that countenance after having killed many, many people. You know, this really isn't a good introduction to what the military is all about. So on the one hand, Kimberly is kind of right, you know, it is a soldier's job to kill. But at the same time, you know, it's not a good thing, it's a regrettable thing. And Kimberly is the sort of person who certainly enjoys the act of killing. You know, it's unfortunate that he is, in fact, making a good point, you know. Did you put on the uniform expecting that you wouldn't have to kill people? And, you know, if you did do that, you know, shame on you. That's kind of a foolish thing to do. But at the same time, you know, it really seems like Kimberly enjoys his work in a way that, you know, nobody really should. So it seems like this was sort of like a bit of a galvanizing moment for Mustang in that he decided since there's all this bad stuff going on, I'm not going to stand for that. I'm going to try and reform things from the inside. So now we cut over to Marco and his doings. You know, he was sort of transmuting Ishbalans into Philosopher's Stones. And it looks like a rather horrific process. You know, even at the time, he seems unsettled by this whole business. In no small part because it worked. Alright, so this is interesting. You know, the stone that was transmuted was given to Kimblee. Kimblee is sort of a central figure here in that he was sort of more or less responsible for the death of Scar's brother. Even more interesting, there's really only one stone, apparently, but that stone was enough to turn the entire momentum of the war around. I feel like if there were competent people in charge of the military, giving something like the Philosopher's Stone to Kimblee would be a big mistake. But given that we know Wrath is in charge of the military and he works for other evil creatures, you know, this was probably just, I don't know, something they thought might be interesting. You know, give a Philosopher's Stone to a psychopath, see what happens. You know, he might do something cool. So I feel like this interaction right here is Wrath kind of dropping the mask a little bit. You know, the High Priest of Ishvala goes to give up his own life to save his people. And Wrath just sort of tells him that, you know, you are but one man. You know, your life is not worth any more than the life of anyone else. And that you would assume that your life could call off this war is arrogance in the extreme. And I feel like Wrath is really letting the mask slip here by saying that, you know, God is fake. It's merely something invented to keep people in line. I don't know. I feel like he would know better, given that the truth is something known to Father and presumably the homunculi. I mean, the truth that we've seen, that little impish creature, it says, you know, some call me God and all that, but it's clearly a higher power. So this is another interesting scene. You know, despite the war of extermination, Risa Hawkeye has decided that she will stay in the military anyways and work under Mustang. I think she makes a good point in that, you know, we've done bad things, it's our duty to do good things to atone, if only for that reason. So they're sort of making a pact here. You know, Mustang's making it pretty clear, you know, I want you to watch my back, both to protect me, and if I deviate, to kill me. That's a pretty hefty thing to make someone swear, I would think. You know, especially that second bit, you know, kill me if I deviate. All right, so this is another little interesting tidbit here. You know, the military has sort of hamstrung the parliament, and therefore, it's a military state. Man, things are getting a little heavy here. Hawkeye is willing to sort of, I guess, drag everyone through the mud. You know, if he succeeds, he would have trials for war crimes. And, you know, all the so-called heroes of Ishval will be put on trial for the crimes they committed. Which effectively means putting himself and a lot of his friends on trial. It is the right thing to do, but boy, that takes a lot of willpower to go through with. You know, it's like you're essentially going in with the understanding that you are sentencing yourself to death. You have to really believe in what you believe in to be willing to do something like that. Oh dear. So I feel like Mei Chang is sort of learning the wrong lesson here, you know? Alphonse Elric, the bigger brother, is the younger brother. You know, that doesn't make sense. Oh dear. Mei Chang has found herself a new idol, you know? Edward has disappointed, so surely Alphonse won't, right? You know, he just needs to get his body back and everything's all hunky-dory. Oh dear, this is an unwelcome development for the homunculi. You know, Marco seems to have made a bit of an escape, presumably with the help of Scar. Well, escape from this mortal coil, at any rate. Alright, well that's it for this episode. If you've enjoyed it, then by all means, tune in for the next one. See you, Space Cowboy.